Just what makes that little old ant think he'll move that rubber tree plant? Anyone knows an ant can't move a rubber tree plant, but he's got high hopes.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another broadcast of Keeping It Real with Frankie D from the John DeVita Broadcast Center on the Windy City Hometown Entertainment Network and Jack FM 89.7 WRHS FM Norwich. Today's subject will be about the Italian culture. And now, here he is, Frankie D.
Thank you, John, and welcome to Keeping It Real with Frankie D. This is Frankie D here, where we discuss all Italian-American issues and topics and subjects. Today we have a really nice show. We have Italian-American authors that not only are they Italian-Americans, but they've written books dealing with Italian-Americans. So let's get started. We have four authors here. We're going to get started with a veteran of our show, Mr. Bill Dalcero, who has written a book recently finished, published, called Bebop, Swing, and Bella Musica, Jazz and the Italian-American Experience. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Frank.
And congratulations on being published and finishing your book.
Thank you. It took over 10 years, but it was worth it.
It took 10 years?
Over 10 years of
the
research.
The complete process.
Correct. From getting all the initial interviews to, thank God for the internet, getting a lot of stuff researched on the internet, actual reading of books, traveling.
Wow.
All got together.
That's patience, my friend.
Well,
and persistence.
It's a very important subject, so I wanted to make sure I got it right.
Let me ask you something. In the 10-year process, were there moments and days where you thought, forget this, what am I doing?
I'm sure every author experiences that. I can't remember anything specifically, but yeah, I'm sure there were a couple days like that.
But I mean, pretty much from the beginning, 10 years ago, you said, I'm going to write this book.
Yes, but come heck or high water. And in Illinois lately, thanks there's been a lot of high water lately.
And thanks for not
Illinois.
Saying hell. You know, we can't have that.
Well, I know, it's family show, I can't.
Absolutely. Let's go back. Let's talk about your background professionally speaking. Tell me about your background.
In the community, I wrote for Franoi for 10 years, which is the local Italian-American newspaper. Now I edit a national magazine out of New York, write for it also called Italic Way, which is about national issues.
So you are a writer.
Correct. And I have a degree in journalism, which, you know, so that would help, I would hope.
What's your day job?
Day job is a teacher. I teach in the western suburbs. I teach history, a little bit of social studies, and English.
Okay.
So I'm kind of combining a lot of what I do in my full-time job with my passion, which is my part-time job, which I wish would be my full-time job, which is kind of promoting Italian-American history.
That's excellent. A little confusing, but excellent.
Sorry.
That's okay. okay.
It's the weather.
What about jazz? What about music? Do you have a music background?
Actually, I have an uncle. I wish I were a musician, but no, I don't have musical talent. So one of the reasons I wanted to do that was to use my talents, which were writing, to kind of give people credit for their talents. I have an uncle who actually does play drums and saxophone, and he's the one who kind of got me turned on to jazz when I was little. He would take me to all these jazz clubs. I'd watch all these great jazz players.
Oh, so you've had a passion
for this. Exposure for it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a natural, like, trying to combine something like that with Italians.
And with a good story. I did a couple of jazz stories for Franoi. And the book is actually co-written with David Witter, who also does the jazz books now. Jazz articles for Franoi also.
Oh, okay.
He's kind of an expert on the early New Orleans era of it, which we'll talk about. And he did some articles. I did some articles. I said, Dave, we're both doing kind of the same thing here. What do you think about this as a book? And he's like, what do you mean? He's like, well, you know, we keep interviewing all these great jazz guys who are Italian-American. You do a lot of early stuff. Is there a bigger story here? Have Italians been involved in jazz from the beginning, which is the 1890s in New Orleans, up until the present day? And the more research we did, we thought, yeah, look at this. This is like a huge mosaic of a story stretching over 100 years. We should put it into a book.
So you compiled a list of the history of Italian-Americans.
History, facts, and there, many interviews with great Italian-American jazz guys.
Okay. And name like one or two that you interviewed.
A couple of great ones, I'm honored to say. Louis Belson, which a lot of non-jazz fans may have heard of, the great drummer. He was married to the African-American singer Pearl Bailey. His real name was Balassoni, and he was born and raised in Rock Island, Illinois. He's from Illinois.
Wow.
And became famous here. So we got to interview him. What a gentleman. Just like all of the other people, men and women that we've talked to, very classy, intelligent, passionate people. He's one of them. One that people may not know of is from Chicago, Lenny Tristano. He was actually blind, but he was a piano genius, a giant. He changed jazz piano. And he was from, he went to Senn High School in Edgewater. This is back in the 1940s.
He went to Senn. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Okay. So Italian Americans have had a tremendous influence or contribution?
Contributions,
or what would you say?
It's both, actually. So there's really nobody that you can't point to one particular person and say, well, that's the guy who invented jazz. They think it might have been Buddy Bolden, who was an African American from like the early 1900s. But there were no records back then, so there were no recordings. You can't really research it. But the Italians were in New Orleans. In fact, they started coming to New Orleans in the 1850s, way before the 1890 immigration. So that's another part of the book. We try to expand Italian-American history, which actually goes back 400 years in America, not 120.
Wow.
They came in the 1850s. They were the dominant ethnic group, and they brought their musical traditions with them. And they lived in the city proper next to African-Americans. So it was kind of natural that they would both kind of influence each other, hear each other's music, and both of those elements kind of got blended into jazz when it just kind of formed.
And I could be wrong, but were a lot of these gentlemen Sicilians?
Many were Sicilian,
because
yes,
I know correct. That many Sicilians went to New Orleans
correct.
In those days.
Louis Prima, one of the first great jazz stars from New Orleans. His parents were Sicilian. Sam Butera. It's documented in the book, yes.
And okay.
Great stories.
Great, great. Well, congratulations. That's
Thank
great.
You.
That's great. And I mean, it's a judgment call to say, like, who invented this? It's not like who invented baseball, that we know, or who invented basketball, but who is the inventor of the jazz music?
That's hard. It's tricky. I mean, African-Americans, largely. It's an African-American musical form.
Did you get any negative? I didn't mean to interrupt, but do you have any negative, like, feedback saying, like, you know, I don't know, like, you know, who are you? Who do you think Italian-Americans, they, like, they're responsible for jazz, you know, and, like, other groups maybe got offended?
Well, that's why we were very careful to address that issue, because we didn't want people to misinterpret what we're doing. We're not taking away from anybody or, you know, trumpeting ourselves. In fact, in the intro to the book, we put specifically the purpose of the book was to be celebratory, not chauvinistic. And that's why we called it Jazz and the Italian-American Experience, because every ethnic group had a different experience with this music.
So you didn't say jazz and why we're responsible for it?
Not at all.
Good for you.
Not at all.
Okay, that's great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have Robert Lombardo. And Robert, you've written two books, The Black Hand, Terror by Letter in Chicago, and Organized Crime in Chicago Beyond the Mafia. Welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Well, thanks for having me. Good afternoon.
And you have a very interesting background, if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I'm what they used to call in my neighborhood a half-breed. I'm a half Sicilian and half Polish. My mother spoke fluent Polish.
I would imagine that's a common thing in Chicago, a lot of half Italian, half Polish.
And, you know, we grew up in my grandmother's basement, and my aunt and uncle grew up in my grandmother's attic, just like most of
What neighborhood were you from?
Chicago and Pulaski, Chicago and
okay.
Hamlin.
Okay.
And very Italian neighborhood. I went to Our Lady of the Angels Grammar School. You're probably familiar with that. That's where the Great Fire was
Absolutely.
In 1958. Mm. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Miss it every day. Mm. It was a huge extended family. Every Sunday was like a holiday at the Lombardos.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, it was just wonderful times. Wonderful, wonderful times.
Mm. Okay. And were you a writer from...
No, not at all. I had become a police officer. I was a career Chicago policeman for 32 years. And while I was with the police department, I kept going to school. I thought it would be a way to advance would be to get an education, and at least that's what they told us. And I ended up with a PhD. I finally finished... towards the end of my career, because, you know, the stumbling block typically for many PhDs is that dissertation. And when you're working a full-time job, it's really hard to find time to sit down and write a book. But I eventually got that done. And then upon retiring from police work, I had taught part-time 7 years at DePaul and eventually landed a full-time job at Loyola, where I've been 10 years now as a member of the not only the graduate faculty, but I'm also in the, of course, undergraduate faculty, but also in the criminal justice and criminology
department. Wait a minute, you
department
were a policeman
Loyola.
For 32 years, 7 years at DePaul, 10 years at Loyola.
Well,
how old are you?
97?
You look like you're like 38. So
those 7 years at DePaul were part-time while I was working on the police department.
Okay. Oh, okay. And what have you been teaching? Criminal justice? Or
yes. Well, Yes, everything revolving around criminal justice and criminality. I've taught, of course, organized crime, which brought me to my book, or I should say my book brought me to teach organized crime. I teach gangs. I teach writing for social sciences. I teach criminal justice. I teach criminology.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. With all the knowledge, how did you go to writing then? Like, how did you actually start writing? Because it seems like you have the background for it, the schooling, the teaching, but how did you start writing books?
Well, you can't be a professor if you don't write. I mean, my second book actually was my dissertation. You have to write the equivalent of a book in order to receive your PhD.
Okay.
So that's what brought me to write.
Okay, I'm not going to lie. I didn't know that. And just keeping it real here, I did not actually know that. You have to write a book to get your PhD.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay. No, that's good to know. That's good to know. Okay.
My Black Hand book started out as a chapter in the organized crime book in my dissertation, but it just grew into, I thought it was such a great story that it grew into a book of its own. And as a matter of fact, that book came out first. I was so involved in writing that and researching it. There was just a tremendous amount of information available, wonderful information that has never been made public. And I was particularly interested in the efforts of two groups of people, the White Hand Society, Italian-American civic and business leaders that fought Black Hand crime, who have never been recognized for their heroic efforts, and as well as the Black Hand Squad, a squad of six or seven Italian Chicago policemen. It was their job to fight Black Hand crime, and they did a tremendous job doing it. And again, it's another group of people you never hear anything about. All we hear about is Al Capone and the many other Italian gangsters. We never hear about the heroes from the Italian community that stood up and fought crime and evil amongst their fellow Italians.
I don't recall from the book, was Joe Petrosino involved with the Chicago?
No. He led the New York Black Hand Squad.
Right.
And we have the equivalent here, and again, it's never been recognized outside of my book, that we have the exact equivalent phenomena here in the city of Chicago. We had a Black Hand Squad of all Italian police officers, led by a sergeant named Gabriel Longobardi. He was our Petrosino, Chicago's very own. As a matter of fact, early newspapers called him the Petrosino of Chicago.
Wow, that's very, very interesting. Matt, you said this research wasn't that hard? Because I would think you're talking like 1900, 1890s. This had to be kind of difficult to be getting all this, no?
Well, computers are an amazing thing. I got a lot of my information, matter of fact, much of it from newspapers. Once the Tribune became computerized, I mean, it was just a marvelous thing. I mean, I spent days and weeks and had students working with me, sitting in front of microfiche readers at the library, trying to gather information from various newspapers.
You had your students doing this?
Got help.
Very smart, Robert. Very, very smart. Okay, I like that.
But once a group called ProQuest computerized the Tribune, the New York Times, what a fateful day that was when I just entered Black Hand in the computer and it just ran copies for about an hour. I had such a rich trove of valuable, wonderful information that I knew that I had to write a book as opposed to just a chapter within my organized crime book.
That's great. Now, how long was, Bill said his process was about 10 years. How long was yours?
Well, each one was about 4 years. But again, you have to remember, I was working. I had some benefit from Loyola. I received a sabbatical, a fellowship, in order to work on the book for one semester. Of course, I had my summers to work on it.
Let's not forget the students.
A little bit of help from the students.
Okay.
a lot of help from that computer.
Yeah.
And it just takes time. I mean, the dissertation that eventually became a book, I did work on full-time after I retired. And that was 18 months of sitting writing 6 to 8 hours a day, 6 days a week.
Wow.
In order to get that completed.
That's amazing.
So you have to want to do it. It's not something that...
That's a very good point. Yes, it's a very good point, though.
You've got to have the time is the key. Mm-hmm.
You can't fake this.
Plenty of people have the talent. And talking about talent, I'm not so sure it's a... Not to detract from everybody at this table, there's a lot of talent here. But what I've learned is I never thought I had a lot of talent to write, but it's called stick-to-itiveness. You just sit there and you do it over till you get it right, over and over and over again. If you expect help from other people and editors, don't hold your breath.
But it's a pretty nice feeling at the end, right, when that book is on your table?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, good
Every
for you.
Every time you look at it and you read a page, you say, did I write that?
Yes.
Yeah, that's got to be an amazing feeling.
Did I write that?
That's great. Well, thank you. Thank you. Sure. Good for you. Okay, next we have Maria Ayanada. And you wrote, My Mama Told Me, Now I'm Telling You.
That is right. That's my book.
Amongst other books as well.
Yes.
So, My Mama Told Me, and Now I'm Telling You. So tell me about your background to start off with.
Well, my background is actually not in writing. My dream and passion was to work in advertising, and I was blessed enough to achieve that. So I got my undergrad in liberal arts with economics and psychology while working in market research. Weaved into advertising agencies.
Like the Leo Burnett type of thing?
Yes, I actually got an offer from Leo Burnett.
Did you really?
I worked for Young and Rubicam and Frank J. Corbett, and it was huge for me at the time because it was very difficult to get in. I'm a first-generation American.
Uh-huh.
You don't have anybody who can really introduce you. Like my friends had aunts and uncles
right.
and parents who could guide them and get them in where, you know, I had to, like, knock on the door and
sure.
do cold calling. So it was a beautiful moment for me. But as I got into that world, I learned more about marketing and new business and strategy. So I did go for my MBA at University of Illinois, and I got my degree in international business and marketing. And while I was there, I actually went to study in France and Belgium.
Wow.
Because I already have a very rich Italian background. So
sure. You wanted to expand it. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I always had this undercurrent where I wanted to write. I actually started a novel many, many years ago. You know, as you were saying about having the passion and the stick-to-itness.
Sure.
And so as much as I wanted to do it, I never really sat down and completed it.
That particular book?
That particular
okay.
book.
Okay.
But I wrote My Mama Told Me.
Where did this idea come from?
Always wanted to write the proverbs my mom used to tell me because
okay.
I thought they were a wealth of knowledge. And I feared that at the time I was single, but my cousin's kids and all of the next generations would lose that. Mm-hmm. So my mantra is, you know, don't risk losing the wisdom of our ancestors forever.
Totally agree.
And that's what I go and do right now. I give presentations, career counseling.
Oh, you do?
But also
okay.
presentations using the quotes
okay.
to teach about life lessons. So what I do is I merge old world with new world and find that they're not so different sometimes when it comes to the affairs of the heart, like love and empathy and respect and humor. And so I took these proverbs, translate them to English,
okay.
and put a modern day application to them.
And how far back do these date? Do you have any idea
I
of things
know,
like that? Like, I don't, once again, how do you find something out like that? I don't know if that's even possible.
I don't know, but I'm sure it's like 1800s.
Yeah, it's got to be pretty
grandparents
old.
Grandparents versus, you know,
right.
great-great-grandparents, and they didn't have TV, and they would sing and tell fables and proverbs.
I do believe back in the day there was a lot more talking, discussing, you know, just watching.
Interaction.
Yes, interaction. The little child would show off singing or would show off dancing in the living room when everybody was watching. I mean, this couldn't even happen today, you know what I mean? But this
Grab
is...
the accordion.
Yeah, this was pre-television, pre-cable, pre-everything, and just you did whatever you did to amuse yourselves, you know, in a simple way, in a nice way.
Exactly. Even when I was growing up, you know, that's what we would do. We had all, you know, the technology, but still we would sit and we would talk. And that's why I wrote this book. I fear that, you know, generations to come are in jeopardy of losing this information because our elders are passing, sadly. Our
Maria, that's pretty much the basis why I do this show.
I believe
it's because we're losing everything, and I feel by doing this show, we're documenting now this, and we documented a show about Italo Balbo, and we documented a show about your first trip to Italy, and I, you know, that's what I love about this.
And the language is getting lost. I'm a first-generation American.
Where is your family from in Italy?
We're from the central mountains of Italy. It's a town called Castel San Vincenzo. It's Provincia Isernia. And if you could believe it, I was at a baptism, and I met my husband, and he said he was from Italy. And I'm like, well, where are you from? And he's like, oh, you'll never know. There's a population of 700. And I'm like, well, try me.
Same
you
town.
You know he's the same town.
Wow. What region is it in?
Is that not
a coincidence, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it in Molise?
Yes.
Okay, you're in Molise. Okay,
yeah,
that's great.
Yeah. And so why did I actually sit down and write? What actually propelled me
yes.
to put the words on? Well, my mom passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
And I always wanted to write this and never took the time because I was very American. I was into my career, and that was important to me.
So this was after the
this
passing?
This was after my mom passed.
I see.
I always wanted to do it, but
right.
never took the time, like you were saying before. Mm. And my son, who was 5 at the time, on a busy morning, grabbed me and said, "Mommy, sit down, sit down." I said, "What? What, honey?" He's like, "Tell God he's had Grandma long enough. I want her back now."
Wow.
Wow. And as you can imagine, that was a difficult day.
Absolutely.
And I thought, you know what? I can't bring Grandma back. It had been 6 months since she had passed. I go, but I can keep her spirit alive. And that's what I am doing today.
Oh, and that was like the day that propelled you into doing the book.
I actually sat down and said, this book is going to be done and
wow.
it's going to be published.
And how long did it take for you to,
not
to write
long.
It?
The words just flew. A
couple hours?
They
hmm.
flew. I'd always
I was
hope
kidding.
To write, not a couple hours.
Okay, I was I mean, just kidding.
It was a, you know, I would say less than a year.
Oh, okay,
a
okay.
year
quickly compared to the others, yeah.
Quickly because
yeah.
It was a passion project.
Okay.
And it was a project that I needed to own and control, unlike, like if I do a novel or a self-help book
mm-hmm.
that I'm interested in doing now, it was something that was, it's a, you know, affair of the heart, let's say.
I'm just guessing, did a trip to Italy was required for this or no?
I did, actually.
I kind of figured you would have had to go to Italy.
I went to Italy and I took all the pictures
okay.
for the book.
Okay.
And it was a lovely trip. I've been to Italy several times.
Okay, yeah.
I speak fluent Italian or dialect.
That's great.
And I'm just happy now that I speak to high schoolers and I share with them the importance of their ancestors' information. For me, it happens to be Proverbs. For others, it might be, you know, learning how to build a car or to crochet
mm-hmm.
or scrapbooking. And then I go to the retiree community and I say, hey, listen, talk. The kids are listening. And it would be you'd be surprised how many grandparents say, oh, they don't listen to me. They don't have time. They listen. It looks like they're not listening. I mean, I wonder sometimes would my mom realize that I have enough to fill another 3 books of
mm-hmm.
Proverbs. Never written one down. They're all in my head.
Wow.
And they were, it's not a book, it's a part of who I am.
Feels pretty good seeing that book on your
shelf.
Feels
pretty good. And
yeah.
when I have people tell me like how it impacted them and, you know, and how they shared it.
That's great.
You know, an example would be like if someone's having a hard time with their child and you get exhausted, you don't feel like, you know,
I'm assuming that's all of us, but okay, I know I am, but...
One of the proverbs are, you know, la pianta si piega quando è piccola e poi dove non si piega più, which is a lesson that means the tree is bent when it is young, and when it is rooted, it will no longer be bent.
I hope you're right.
So that's the moral of the story, is to take the time.
Father of teenagers, I hope you're right. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Sign of the cross there, buddy.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
no, that's very good, and I totally agree with you. With every generation that goes, we lose something. But speaking for our group, our ethnic group, oh, my God, it's like the fourth quarter with like 25 seconds to go in the game if we don't do something because, like you said, nobody comes here from Italy anymore. Neighborhoods and Italian families are living out in Plainfield and are 1/8 Italian. We're dying. We're dying with the language. We're dying with the culture. We're dying with a lot of things. Realistically, I wish it wasn't this way, but it is. So we do need to make a conscious effort and do more, I think, because, you know, I don't want it to be 50 years from now that it doesn't exist. It's possible not to exist. We always think like, well, it has to be there. No, it doesn't have to be there. It doesn't have to be there. If no more Italians come, we will be diluted. And like Dominic Gandolfo always says, every day that goes by is one less day, one day farther removed from Italy. And now we're talking years and decades, and we're going to get into 100 years and 200 years. And it's like, wow, this is not good. This is not good. So kudos to you for the book. And,
mm-hmm.
and
kudos to everybody.
Yeah, to everybody here at the table. Absolutely. Yes,
yes.
Yes.
Thank you, Frank.
Okay, no, thank you. And our last but not least, I'll never say that, is Kathy Catrambone.
See.
Taylor Street, Chicago's Little Italy, and Italian-American Women in Chicago. Those are very interesting titles, Kathy. I know you're a Taylor Street lady. correct? Mm-hmm. Tell me about your background, you know, farther going back.
Sure. Really, I'm from a neighborhood called Tri-Taylor, which is just west of Little Italy. And my mom's side of the family was from Our Lady of Pompeii area. My dad's side, some St. Callistus, and which unfortunately is no longer there.
Oh, it's not? Was that in that area as well?
Right. Right around Taylor and Ogden.
And they closed it?
More than 10 years ago.
The church as well?
Yes, in fact, it is a Christian high school.
Really?
And called Chicago Hope Academy, and the church is a chapel, so most of the Catholic symbols are gone.
You don't really hear that often. I mean, you hear of schools all the time, but you don't really hear of churches closing.
Yeah, so like all the pews.
That's sad.
It's very sad.
Oh, my God, that's sad.
And the statues, et cetera. Of course,
did you grow up going to Pompeii? Did you go to Pompeii school?
No, I went to St. Callistus.
Oh, you went to St. Callistus.
Right,
oh,
and my
gosh.
Dad and a lot of the Catch and Bones went to St. Callistus.
Oh.
And it was kind of interesting because they had photographs of old eighth grade classes.
Really?
And so every day I saw my dad's picture.
Oh, my, your father went there as well.
Yeah, and my cousins and my aunt, so it was pretty hard
to... So you have history at this.
It was pretty hard to disobey when, you know, your dad's looking down at you every day.
Oh, my gosh, wow.
So,
okay.
So I've been Italian my whole life, and
what part of Italy are you as a family from?
Mainly from Calabria,
and
a little bit right outside of Naples.
Okay, nice.
And I was a journalist, and I still kind of consider myself one, even though I'm not, you know, officially writing any longer. But I was a journalist for more than 30 years, and worked on a lot of newspapers and some magazines. And I taught at Medill and at Columbia College, and got caught up in the, you know, really 10 years ago now with the implosion of the industry. And one good thing about that is I was unemployed for a while and had time to write a book, which is when I did the Taylor Street, Chicago's Little Italy. And it's a history book, and it's mainly photos, and it's published by a company called Arcadia, and what they do across, they have like 4,000 titles across the country. So they tell you how many photos, how many words on a page, how many pages in the book. And people can have a year or two, you know, to do this, and they gave us 4 months. So
you did this whole book in 4 months. Wow.
And it was a lot because starting from scratch, really, because the strength of this kind of book is with the photos. And so to be talking with people and asking them.
I was going to say, were you knocking on people's
doors? And it, you know, sometimes, you know, photos are lost in fires and flooded basements and or just over time. And so it was difficult to get
I bet
photos and to get a range of photos, and the quality had to be of a certain level. And some people were very forthcoming and some weren't, you know, and you only had 4 months. So it was luckily my co-author and I both had worked at the same newspaper company, Pioneer Press. So we knew how to work fast. We knew how to edit. Because we literally could only have so many words on a page. And so...
Plus, I bet there was a little apprehension with people, like, handing over that picture that's, like, my only copy. It's from 1905, and it's like, I love you, Kathy, but...
Exactly.
Do I really want to leave this, get this out of my possession? So I bet that you encountered that often.
In fact, I had one man who followed, who came with me to make copies. And then, you know, I returned them. But then he took me out for dinner, so that was...
Oh, okay. That was very nice of him.
And one thing, when you go into people's homes for photos, you always get a cup of coffee and some biscotti at least. So it was great.
That's great. That's great.
And as I was doing it, because of my journalism background, I realized that this is the tip of the tip of the tip of the iceberg just for that neighborhood, because Italians started to come to Chicago in the 1800s and eventually settled there. And although they weren't the first ethnic group, there had been Jews before that who, as they prospered, moved further west. And at a certain point, there was a sizable Mexican population. But the Italians really did outnumber everyone and stayed the longest. And we still have Italians there, although obviously it's not the same
Well, I mean, nothing is. Right, nothing exactly. is. So it's not just Taylor Street.
Right. But I'm surprised how often I still meet people who say, I've lived in the neighborhood my whole life.
I bet it was received very well in the...
it was, yes. Yeah, and I would love to do another one not confined to this particular publisher because there is so much more to write about. And also, just like Bill said in his the foreword of his book, we said that we were not writing about the mafia. There are other books that do better that we wanted to talk about the people who never get written about.
Right. Okay. Okay. So that one was quick. What about the other book, Italian American Women in Chicago? What is that about? I'm really kind of confused.
This is really a fantastic book, which Maria knows about because she is in it.
Maria Ayanada is in it as well. Okay, great.
Proverbs. This was the brainchild of Dominic Cantaloro, who you've already referenced, and he is with Casa Italia in Stone Park. He's a historian by education and realized in his work as a historian, there was so much written about Italian men, but very little about Italian women.
Mm.
And so what we did, he wanted to do Italian women in Chicago. And
look
so
at Dominic playing both sides. I like it.
Yeah.
Very smart man.
And so he got Gloria Nardini, who has a PhD in writing, and she's taught at U of I, and brought me on. And
you guys sat at a table and said, okay, we're going to write this book about Italian-American women in Chicago. We need to have in this book, this woman. Is that how it went?
Well,
or
no.
Did people throw out suggestions and say?
No. Dominic started first approaching people he knew and asking them to write.
But to write in
about
it.
About their story, their, you know, because any writer will tell you, you know, you have to write about what you know. Mm-hmm. And so he went to Maria because he knew about her book about Proverbs.
Oh, so you wrote about yourself.
Yes, and about my book and how.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like the importance of it to me.
See, I thought this was a book about, like, women that are deceased that, you know, had
there
done
some,
that.
There are.
Oh, there
yes,
are.
Yes, yes. And we started off very historically and, you know, you can't do a book with without.
Yeah, give me
talking.
One name of
well,
someone from the past.
Mother Cabrini.
Mother Cabrini, okay.
Okay, Florence Scala.
Florence Scala, sure.
Okay. And what was really good about this, just as everyone here has written something that someone didn't know about, this book, too, talks about some early political activists and other women in Chicago and the importance they had, which you just don't know about, you know. And one woman, she was a midwife, and because she knew so many people and she had helped, you know, people be born, that she realized she could use her knowledge and her connections for political, not political gain for herself, but for the neighborhood.
Really?
That she said, I'll deliver votes if you give us garbage pickup.
Oh.
If you clean the sewers, you know, et cetera. And she was called the Queen of Little Italy by the Chicago Trib when she died.
Really?
And in the second half of the book, it's much more contemporary.
Okay.
And we do get into poetry and short stories and pieces of a play, and that we do have some male authors in here, but they write about women.
Right, it's all about women. Okay.
And we've done a number of lectures. Dominic and Gloria and I, and Gloria has lectured in Italy. She speaks fluent Italian. She has a home there. So she has spoken in Rome and Genoa and other places.
Oh, that's great.
And the book now is being translated into Italian.
Excellent.
And it's going to be sold in Italy. And when she spoke, a number of people bought the book, even though it was in English. And obviously she spoke in Italian. But when we go to the local libraries, I'm always just like you were saying, I wrote that. It's like, holy Toledo, this is like a really important book.
Yeah. That's,
it's like,
yes.
Because from a historic and just a human aspect of it.
Absolutely.
And so, and there's been a lot of interest in it. We've done a number of speaking engagements. This took well over a year. This was something Dominic
thought.
Oh,
I would have thought it would have taken longer with the amount of people involved.
Yeah, it was.
Honestly, that's pretty fast.
It was a really long time.
And it was also, for me, very interesting because there's a woman in there who is a judge. Yes. Okay. And I looked at it and I thought, wow, as my senior, I thought, I didn't even know, you know, an Italian woman who's a judge in Chicago. I mean,
yeah, that's probably not a common thing. Yeah.
And then there was another lady who actually was one of the dancers for Dean Martin. And I
really?
Like fun. So right. That was
I love
like
Dean
really,
Martin.
Yeah.
That
was wow. Really, and she's a singer. Yeah. Joyce Garrow. Yeah.
Okay. And I got to. Oh, really? Yeah. I know who that is.
Yeah.
She Dolores the Florist?
That's yes, her. That yes, was her mother.
A, yes.
And
okay.
And she wrote a piece about her mother.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
okay.
Dolores the Florist.
Yeah. Dolores the Florist. Yes. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Her mom's still well, healthy and alive.
Okay. Great.
But again, this also helps record that history.
Absolutely.
That would have been lost.
Absolutely.
And like my mom, like when I look at this type of book, I see, you know, here are people who most of them don't have more than a sixth grade education.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they speak and they work like they're scholars.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know, and to me, that is really impressive. Mm-hmm. And
quite impressive because they don't have all that maybe we have.
They don't have the guidance that we have, the education, the schooling.
And you can see that there's a chapter here of letters that a woman wrote to her husband who was in America. She was in Italy, and it was her and her mother-in-law who wrote beautiful, beautiful
wow,
letters.
Wow, that sounds great.
It was just astounding.
That sounds
so
great.
It really, and the proceeds go to Casa Italia.
Oh, do they?
And we have been selling really well. I don't even know if we have many left. But
wow, that's great.
But if people are interested, they really should call Casa Italia.
Okay.
And you could also get it on Amazon. And I also think we should all plug our...
Well, absolutely. But one question before we do that. Who's the queen of Little Italy?
Oh.
Don't leave me hanging like that. I don't know who you're talking about.
Serafina Ferrara? Was it not Serafina Ferrara? No.
Who somebody different. Was called the angel?
The angel. Okay.
Come on, Bill. Get that right.
No,
my
she
God.
The angel of... Halsted Street.
There you go.
Because she helped so many people. And something like, she has like, oh, she's passed now, but she had like more than 300 godchildren. Because
wow.
Everyone wanted her to be their
the godmother.
And she did all kinds of things about helping people when they needed jobs. I
wow.
mean, she really,
that's great.
She really helped a lot. But
make a great movie.
Okay,
it really
you find out before we end. So, everybody, that is important. Tell me, how do I get your book?
You can go to the website, www.italians, plural, I-T-A-L-I-N-S, injazz.com. It's also available on Amazon.
Okay, thank you. Maria?
And you can get My Mama Told Me, Now I'm Telling You, at www.crisscrosspublishing.com, or you can get it on Amazon as well.
Okay, Robert?
University of Illinois Press. It's all online or Amazon, of course.
Okay. And I know you're in the library, Chicago Public Library.
Yes.
Sulzer Library, to be specific.
Oh.
I took it out.
Okay.
Okay, kid.
Okay. Anna Carlo Blasi is the woman.
Anna Carlo Blasi is the
is
queen.
The woman, she was the queen
of
Little Italy, and she came here with virtually no education.
Okay, so and that's a fact that we did not know.
Broker. Right, yeah, it's
right.
Amazing.
And as far as Chicago's Little Italy,
yes,
Amazon. It's
Amazon?
Also, yes, it's also published by Arcadia. You can get it in bookstores, Barnes & Noble. And can I tell you a real quick story?
Absolutely,
okay.
Please.
When it first came out, I would check, and I had friends and cousins checking the placement in Barnes & Noble.
Oh.
So there were many rearrangements. I have to admit, maybe the Polish and the Irish books got a little down.
Pushed
on the
in the back? Wow.
Yeah, just a little lower.
God, I wish I didn't hear
just
that. Now my
lower,
image is blown.
Just
I can't
a little
see.
Low, but, you know, I wanted to make sure that the Taylor Street book was prominently
displayed. Kathy, you got to do what you got to
do.
Do
what you got to do.
I always say
and
that.
I
would
never say
she's not the only one.
It's just being a good business.
Now we're being honest. The honesty's coming out. Okay.
Somehow I never got kicked out of Barnes & Noble.
Well, that's okay.
My wife and I would go from store to store.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you.
Bravo.
And one last thing you want to tell us, Kathy?
Yes, please.
I can learn a lot from you guys.
Now that I'm not a full-time journalist, my day job is executive director of the University Village Association, which is the neighborhood association in Little Italy, and we are having our 9th annual Festa Italiana, August 13th to the 16th. We've got some new features this year, absolutely fantastic Italian-American singers and jazz and big bands, and they are all Italian-American.
And this is on Taylor Street.
On Taylor Street.
August 13th through the 16th. Festa Italiana. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Excellent.
Please come. Excellent.
Well, thank you all for coming and spending the time. It was very interesting, and I tip my hat to all four of you that you persisted. And you did something, and it's great for our people and our community, and for that, I applaud you.
Thank you.
Always do on this show, we leave with the quote of the show. I don't know who it's by, but I like it. Every human being has immense, incredible capacities of strength, of faith, of potential achievement. Become aware of them and use them. Kind of goes well with our show tonight. So thank you all. John DeVita, thank you. Kevin Zaswick, it's been an excellent, excellent show.
Just what makes that little old ant think he'll move that rubber tree plant? Anyone knows an ant can't move a rubber tree plant.
But he's got high hopes. He's got high.
You have been listening to Keeping It Real with Frankie D and his guest from the John DeVita Broadcast Center on Jack FM 89.7 WRHS FM Norwich and the Windy City Hometown Entertainment Network. This broadcast was directed by John DeVita. We want to give special thanks to radio station manager Kevin Zeflik of WRHS FM Norwich and the executive producer of the Windy City Hometown Entertainment Network, Mr. John Ciconda. This broadcast was pre-recorded on Monday, June the 29th, the year of our Lord, 2015. Until next time, be safe, and thanks for listening.
No one could make that ram scram. He kept butting that dam, 'cause he had high hopes. He had high hopes.
And this is Jack FM 89.7 WRHS FM, Norwich, Illinois.